This is Place Matters, a podcast at the intersection of race, place, and poverty, where we explore the belief that the path towards ending inequity and promoting prosperity is through the work of holistic neighborhood development. Welcome to a special series focusing on the role of churches in their neighborhoods. During this series on Place Matters, we will talk to leaders, scholars, practitioners, and mobilizers who speak to the joys and challenges of inviting churches into partnership with their neighborhood. I'm Sean Duncan, the Director of Training and Consulting for FCS, and my colleague, David Park, one of our lead consultants, will be your host for this series of Place Matters. Jesus made it almost embarrassingly clear that to follow his way, there are really two things to do. Love God, love people. Well, actually, that isn't entirely accurate. What he commanded us to do was to love God and love our neighbor. But does that distinction matter between people generally or neighbor specifically? And if it does matter, does loving your neighbor have to mean you love your neighborhood? And do those implications go beyond the expectation of an individual loving their individual neighbor to churches collectively loving their neighborhood? Well, to show our cards, our answer would be yes. For the church to enter into the full work of following Jesus, place matters. After all, most of the New Testament books are named after places. And the names of those churches were simply the names of those places, like Ephesus or Corinth. But what does this mean? How does this work? These are the questions that will occupy us for the majority of this series. And in this episode, we're talking to our good friends, colleagues, and clients, Dave Berger and Peter Huff. Peter and Dave are two congregational leaders in Alton, Illinois, a post-industrial river town. Peter and Dave are the city catalysts who have been working with us to lead a City Shapers cohort in Alton. These guys exhibit so many of the qualities for what it means to personally love your neighbor, but to also invite your congregation to loving your neighborhood. So listen in as one of our lead consultants, David Park, talks to Peter and Dave about the necessity, challenges, and possibilities of being a place-based church.
Well, welcome to this special series of Place Matters. And in this series, we're going to be focusing on the church's connection to the neighborhood. And so for this, I'm David Park. I'm a consultant and trainer with the Lupton Center. But for this episode, I've invited two friends, Peter Huff and Dave Berger from Alton, Illinois, whom I got a chance to work with in our City Shapers cohort in Alton. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your context?
Sure. Peter, I'd love to start. My name's Peter Huff. I'm the pastor of a little church called Alton Mission. I've been in Alton for about 13 and a half years now. So I've gotten to know Alton a little bit as an outsider coming in. But context-wise, Alton is a small post-industrial river town. It's in the metropolitan St. Louis area, just across on the Mississippi side and across the Mississippi on the Illinois side. We have a poverty rate that's twice the national average. You look at us in some ways and we're a small town. In other ways, people think that we've got areas that are inner city, which is, usually just code for poor and black or poor and people of color. Alton is pretty much entirely white and black. So our African-American demographics are, percentages pretty far above the national average as well. And Alton has long had this kind of checkered historical connection to the civil rights movement, which has been really amazing to learn about just as an outsider and to learn things that that not everybody who's grown up here kind of knows. But the first month that I got here in July 2010, a friend set up lunch and I met Dave Berger, and that's when my life got ruined. So Dave can take
Yeah, and with that, I am Dave Berger, the ruiner of lives. And I'm also a pastor at a local church here in Alton. And Peter said most of that, so we don't have to take a lot of time with who Alton is. But yeah, Peter and I came to Alton in the same month and the same year, which is kind of special. And 13 plus years later, still working together. So it's been a fun friendship and collaboration. And yeah, so it's great to be on.
Yeah, but you grew up here. Did you say
I did grow up here. Okay. I did grow up here and then was gone for a number of years, but came back home.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing. And I think one of the things that we noticed early on, or at least I noticed early on after meeting you guys, was how playful and how fun you guys are just to be around, which sometimes ministry life is a grind. So you don't always find people that are willing to laugh and
work. Yeah, most times. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your churches.
Well, they're different for sure. Yeah. I'll start with one that's been established longer. Came back in 2010, had the opportunity to actually help lead in the church I grew up in here in Alton. And it was a church that had just been established in 1970. And as the decades had gone by, just kept getting older and had become much more internalized. And so for me, it was an invitation, an opportunity, a calling to come back to a place that I had roots and to be able to just try to speak in on what it would look like to be a church that is sent out again and to bring some health. The average age of the church when I came back home was about 72, and often thought about, do we just kind of dissolve this and start again in 3 to 6 months? And I knew so many people that were still a part of the congregation decided that we would try and become multi-generational in a few years. And so God's been faithful in that work. It's been a journey for sure. But yeah, so a more traditional established church trying to become more missional and much more place-based in the city where God's put us.
Yeah, I originally came to Alton as associate pastor of a similar kind of church called Emmanuel Free Methodist. And so that church had a calling and a history of really supporting church plants and other works. So they had a calling to plant a church within Alton, but that had been put on pause a little bit. And so when I came, just trying to get to know the story of that church family, the story of that little community. I was surprised by the calling that came out of even just that first 6 months, go plant a new work in Alton, when I thought, well, we're already the church in Alton. But it made sense to try to start something that would be a little bit more embedded in neighborhoods, a little bit more connected to the heart of Alton, and entangled in the lives of our neighbors. And so that's how Alton Mission started.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Both of you mentioned sort of recovering that sense of neighborhood. And you mentioned, Dave, that it started off because they were, maybe inadvertently in this more traditional setting, it had become more internally focused. Do you think, from where you're coming from, are churches doing a good job of connecting to neighborhood just sort of in general, or is there a sort of pull or tension there between church and loving their neighbor?
Yeah, for sure. I think the default for a lot of us that lead in congregations, we'd all say that if we're not careful, the default is to become internalized. The default is what I remember growing up in this church back in the late 80s. Our church van was a really cool retro two-tone blue 1978 Chevy van that broke down about every other trip. But on the back of that van, I'll always remember, it just simply gave this invite to come grow with us. Like, that was kind of the mantra of that era and that time. And I think, as I think about where we're located on the outside of Alton, not so much more where the church meets where Peter is now in downtown Alton, it has been hard for us. I mean, I think, right, we can thank the invention of the automobile that place-based ministry is just, because we want to be careful, we just don't define place-based by a building and where we gather. The church is everywhere. We have been multi-site since the beginning of the church, and that in every neighborhood can be a believer, a person on every street, in every block. Just naturally, we've had to begin there, just talking about being missional, being the ecclesia, the sent ones. And so we've had to navigate over 13 years now to really be intentional, to be engaged in neighborhood. The problem we have, not that it's a bad problem, but certainly provides us opportunities to get better, is that the people that are part of our family, our community, are from all over this county, Madison County. And so people drive, you know, from across the street, the neighborhoods there, but as far away as 45 minutes to be a part of our community, just because they feel a connection to someone or people there. And so that makes it really difficult when we think about place-based. The things we talk about in Alton sometimes don't really, they just don't resonate with people who live 30 and 45 minutes away. They live in different towns and communities. So part of our conversation has been, you know, love your neighbor where you are, be intentional to know your neighbors, to engage the work in your community, in your city, your town. But then for Alton, for sure, because this is where we gather, much more focused on neighborhood and really just trying to engage neighbors. So it's been complicated for us, very difficult to think about place-based, not just in a location of a facility or a meeting place, but man, when we scatter, you know, we're in many neighborhoods and workplaces in a community. What's that look like?
Yeah, so the scattering of the church almost diffuses its sort of neighborhood,
it can,
neighborliness.
For sure.
What about for you, Peter?
I don't, in the training that I had, I know it's fashionable to complain about what seminary did not train you for, but in all the church experiences that I've had and in the training, and even in most of the, you know, books, experiences, conferences, other people that I've talked to, I mean, there's so much more of a focus on getting people into the church than being rooted in the neighborhood, being a part of the neighborhood. And the church in America is an industry. I mean, I think that there's something very powerful, very spiritual, very real about it. And at the same, these are overlapping realities. I mean, it's an industry. And even if there's one thing that you know, which is, you know, we want to be embedded in the lives of our neighbors. We want the church to impact the neighborhood, and we want to have the vulnerability to allow the neighborhood to impact the church as well. But at the same time, you have an industry that is set up to count, to celebrate, to idolize, to give you tools just to get more people, more money, more influence, more visibility. And so those things that we prize, they're not out in the neighborhood. They're in the building. They happen, you know, once or twice a week. And so, yeah, it's really hard to go against the flow. But I would also say that I don't feel like we fully grappled with just how significantly the shape of the American church currently has been determined by white flight, not just mobility, but a specific kind of escape. And so, you know, when white flight happens, powered by the new shape of cities and automobiles, and then you're shutting down public transportation so that, you know, people of color can't fly to the suburbs after you. I mean, it rearranged American life. I don't think we're going to become a less mobile society anytime soon, but I think we've got to find a way to kind of grapple with what white flight has done to the shape of the church, what white flight has done to the shape of our theology. I mean, I think there's this vicious cycle. We're going, I guess, a little radical, a little quickly, sorry. But there's this vicious cycle, I think, between like the way that the evangelical, white evangelical church understands salvation as escape and white flight. And this vicious cycle between the two. So if you've got this idea of restoration, redemption, salvation, our escape from evil, brokenness, sin, darkness, and everything else, then it's going to be awfully difficult, I think, with that predominant understanding of salvation to even reshape individual disciples' actions to be rooted in a place that the American church has defined as, you know, devoid of goodness, and it's dangerous, and it's dark, and it's, you know, in need of salvation. So I think there's something like simple where church is kind of an industry and it works against place-based stuff. But I think there's also this deeper legacy and history and how that's even shaped our theology.
Well, thanks for tuning in to our first and last episode of... No,
just keeping it light. That's what Peter does.
Yeah.
But that's I think you're naming something that's really important to name, which is probably the first barrier to the church being a good neighbor is internal. There's something deep within our identity and the way we're looking at our neighbors without looking at ourselves and how we got here. And I think you're actually sort of saying, hey, before you even got into this neighborhood, there's something that drove you. There's something that compelling our churches to behave in a certain way that estranges us from our neighbors rather than sees them as valuable and as assets to who we are in our congregations. What are some other barriers? Or maybe if you want to keep going, you can name some of these barriers. You've named one is missiologically, we're sort of all wrecked. We're also somewhat theologically, the way we view ourselves, especially if you view ourselves without looking at white flight and sort of our own socioeconomics driving our sense of church growth. What are some other things that you would expound on? You or Dave?
Well, I mean, like, so in the UK, I learned this from a new friend over in the UK who they have a minister of loneliness, like as part of their national government. So someone whose whole job is to work on inclusion and community building. And
does he do it?
So I learned what?
Does he do it by himself? That would be like,
yeah, that'd be hilarious. Yeah. There's only one. And he's very lonely. Yes, exactly.
I'm sorry.
But it's like such a significant thing over there. So I learned that a couple of years ago. And then just in this past year, the Surgeon General put out an advisory report on social inclusion, belonging, and community building, and the connection to the social determinants of health and everything else. So like, I think that we also, we can no longer rely on community, belonging, inclusion to be just kind of an automatic in our culture. Like, I think for the most part, you could go to a place where most everybody was just kind of like you, and so much of your community could just be assumed by what you already had in common. And so now that we're becoming an increasingly polarized place, now that fewer and fewer people are going to churches, now that you know, generations after the boomers aren't joiners, then a lot of those things that were just automatic, they aren't automatic anymore. And so I don't think that even just kind of basic belonging, community building, social inclusion kind of skills, I don't think we're really teaching those because we haven't ever really had to before. You know, it's just kind of like, well, I'm just show up at a place where everybody already knows each other, and we're just gonna, you know, like we're gonna rely on. So in like the 80s and 90s, part of the church growth movement, there's that homogeneous unit principle of church growth, right? You just like attracts like, which, you know, isn't even the power of the gospel. I mean, that's just sociology. There's nothing miraculous about that. So you just said, okay, well, like attracts like, then we'll just use that sociology to kind of build an organization. And I mean, I think to a certain extent that can still work, but it really relies on community building, inclusion, relational connection to happen outside of the church. And then we just sort of use it or take advantage of it rather than actually discipling people in, you know, reconciliation, discipling people in belonging, discipling people in accept one another just as Christ accepted you.
So I hear that kind of similar to like, you know, common sense isn't very common anymore. You're saying like even the sense of belonging and the practices of community aren't taught anymore. So it seems to me that the church would have to be at least self-aware that, hey, this is something we have to be good at, is community and belonging. And that doesn't seem to me, or, you know, hospitality doesn't, although I know some churches have those as values, it doesn't seem to be taught. It just seems to be more like, you know, preached. How do we practice that, I guess, is another challenge.
Right. And that in itself, hospitality in itself, is a gift to our wider community, to our culture, to our world. And hospitality that doesn't necessarily have as its end point or validation, you know, more people in a Sunday gathering. And I think that's the really hard thing as well, is a lot of times in the church, you just go, well, okay, it's hard to see why we would do that if it can't be validated by increased attendance on Sunday morning.
Man, that's really true. I find that to be really challenging. How have, like, so obviously both of you have churches, and it seems like in somewhat different neighborhoods. How does the neighborhood feel about your church now, and has that changed over the years?
Yeah, I think for us, we are directly across from two pretty large neighborhoods. We are two blocks from the high school. We have a great relationship with the high school. That's been intentional to build out that relationship, to be students park on our parking lot, you know, during the week. That's just part of that overflow and just an opportunity where we get to engage students, work with administration. That's all really good. I think our experience with the neighbors in the closest proximity to us, our neighbors that just simply, like so many people, they drive home after a day of work or school, they raise the garage door, they pull the car in, they put the garage door down. And so a lot of what Peter's talking about is this loneliness. And so it's been very difficult in all of our efforts just to, because a small amount of people, a part of our community, actually live in those neighborhoods. You know, they drive in, they're not walking across the street. And so in all of our efforts, what we're finding, people that are even open to church life, open to considering Jesus in their life, will say, well, I already have, you know, I drive far away to another congregation, or I watch mine online, or I'm agnostic or atheist or whatever. And we find obstacles constantly just trying to do life. And it's difficult when you don't live in that neighborhood. You know, when you just drive into a campus, to a facility, a building of any kind, it makes it really difficult. And I think that the majority of us in ministry find that barrier constantly.
Yeah, our relationship with our neighborhood, we don't own any property. So probably, I mean, at this point, almost 2/3 or 3/4 of the members of our church are people in chronic poverty. And a significant number of unhoused people. So we don't own any property. And at this point, we're actually in a place that a friend rents. And so we don't even pay for Sunday morning. So we're not even renters there right now. So we're downtown in a commercial space. So because of that, we don't have a whole lot of, you know, residential neighbors, except for a lot of the unhoused people who, you know, live in some of the kind of green spaces or a grove of trees or whatever. And so with them, we actually have, you know, I think a pretty good relationship. They feel comfortable. They feel like they belong. They feel like, you know, it's not, you know, when Alton Mission gathers, you know, so we do worship and then we do a common meal right after worship every Sunday. And we try to just make it as mutual and as I don't know, empathetic, as connected, as vulnerable, you know, as possible, a chance for everybody to lead, a chance for everybody to give of themselves, and everybody to receive and to be led and to be served. And so I think we've got a good relationship with, I mean, our most proximate neighbors are probably the unhoused folks that are down there.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's really beautiful and challenging, right?
Hey guys, just jumping in real quick to say that we would love to take your church and local partners through our 2-year cohort process called City Shapers. The cohorts that are launching this year will be funded partially by Lilly Endowment, So it's a great time to get involved. We have had 3 communities go through this process so far and would love to bring it to you next. So contact us today to learn more at fcsministries.org.
I guess, why do you think people, or what do you think your church offers, I guess, or is uniquely positioned, or what is it that your church gives or offers to the community around it?
I don't know. That's a hard question for me. I mean, I think we all know because of our brokenness, we do struggle. We've been taught to be consumers in this culture. And so Sunday morning gatherings for so many folks, if we're not careful, can just become people coming to consume religious goods. It can be that we come to check this religious box to feel better about ourselves. I think generally people do want to be a part of something bigger than they are. They are interested in things that are spiritual. They're interested in considering Jesus for their lives. I don't doubt any of those things. I just think sometimes the way we're programmed or have learned to pursue anything is just to be consumers. And eventually, if we're not careful, that just becomes about me. And then we run into this obstacle of thinking beyond ourselves. And so a lot of, you know, of the gospel has to really penetrate and transform and change our hearts to get to a place that we'd ever, you know, consider anything different. I think for us, we have been really, really counter to any kind of programming. Like we've pushed really hard because of our context and because we are isolated from so many neighbors that seem open to the gospel, because there's not a lot of poverty right around the facility where we gather. We've really been focused for years now on pushing externally. I learned a lot from Ethos Church in Nashville, Dave Clayton, you may know who he is. And what they started doing was providing grants, and they just called them Love Your Neighbor grants. And so they recognized that there were probably lots of people they weren't connecting with right around where they were, but they also recognized as sent ones that they were in lots of neighborhoods where the church was planted the other 166 or 67 hours of a week. And so people could apply simply for whatever their vision was to do in their neighborhood, to bring a party or to bring a service or something to where they were living. Then the church would help with the expenses, the cost, and providing whatever those materials would be. So maybe it's it's the money to provide meat for a barbecue, and it's money for a bounce house in a neighborhood where people just come together and they just throw really good parties. And so that was something that we've been picking up, just learning on creative ways without just completely planning another church. Instead of all the monies that go into that, can you just partner with other churches that are doing it better than you are? You know, and we could talk more about that later, just in collaboration of churches. But I think for us, we've been careful because so many times the church just becomes known for having really great Easter egg hunts and really good trunk or treats to the point that people are complaining, like, all these trunk or treats, everybody goes to those and they don't come to my house anymore. And I turn my light on, you know, and Christmas Eve is coming up. And so we're working on, you know, all of our publicity and our programming to do really cool stuff that will draw people in. And for us, we're just kind of counter to that. And when people are like, you don't do VBS, you don't do Easter egg hunts, you don't do all. And I was like, no, we're trying to push that out where you live. And that's intentional and it's not always popular. But I think as people experience that, and the relationships that are built, not just on Sundays or an event or a program. The beauty of it is we know our neighbors and we're doing life together. And it's not just how's the weather, or how's your favorite sports team. It's, you know, what's going on in your home, what's going on in your marriages, or your relationships, your workplaces, what are your hobbies, what do you enjoy? And so that connection is slowly happening. But it's hard. It's just, you feel like you're swimming upstream a lot.
Yeah, especially if you say, I'm not going to just dole out religious goods and services, then it starts to like really mess with your own script about what it was.
Sure.
Like kind of what you were saying earlier, Peter, is like, that's all our training is trying to get people inside. And so it's almost like, I'm not trained to do this other thing. What about you, Peter? How does the mission, I guess the uniqueness of it, maybe you've already sort of, it's implicit in a lot of what you said, but sort of the unique gift or offering do you have to the neighborhood or community?
Yeah, I think the gift, the grace of God that I think that we experience has come about a bit accidentally. And that's just that sense of genuine mutuality with people who are unhoused, with people who are in chronic poverty. You know, I knew the demographic information that I sort of spouted off before, that Alton's poverty rate is twice the national average. And so in my experience, my training, my background, my connections, my reading, my whatever, I thought, well, if we're going to plant a church, I mean, I still realize, can look back and realize it now. I had this blind spot where I thought we're going to have a church of people basically like me, and we're just going to go and do a bunch of really good stuff in the neighborhood for the poor. And what happened was the church didn't really take off like we thought it would take off. And it felt very much like we were living in that parable where Jesus says the invited guests didn't come. And so the owner of the house said, we'll go out into the highways and the byways and gather the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame so that my house will be full. And so we had had a few experiences of go, and I know this is big for Lupton Center. I've been shaped by this even before the City Shapers training, which is doing for versus doing with. And so early on, we had a lot of doing for kind of activities and experiments that, you know, the result of the experiment was, I think we're doing this wrong. And then we started to just, you know, ease into some doing with kind of experiences. And then that moment came where we were just like, you know, 2 years in, 3 years in, going, I think we might be done. We might be done. And then, you know, Jackie stood up and gave a testimony and said, well, if we're done, then these other folks that we've had some good experiences with, I mean, she's been in the lives of people who are deep friends of hers, who are in chronic poverty, who are experiencing homelessness and everything else. And I think at first when she would say, oh, here's my friend so-and-so, here's my friend so-and-so, I go, right, our friend. Okay, that's the way we're going to talk about, because in the church, we do a great job of like, talking one way, but we still sort of live out of assumptions that are in conflict with our stated values. And we just got to this place where we were like, okay, maybe we're not, our one last shot is we're just going to see if maybe the poor want to come and join us, right? And we still had those real firm categories. And so the next week we started the common meal, and we've had it ever since. And those that first few months, there was just this moment of those of us who are ready to just, you know, throw in the towel, like it just walking around the common meal table, people with tears in their eyes, like, I can't believe they just want to be here with us. So like we had to go through this, this struggle, this story of weakness and failure, really, to get to a place where our pride and our categories were so broken down that we were just ready to receive the gift of another person's presence. And to receive, like, the first thing that happened for me in that transition from a church for the poor to a church of the poor was just to receive a person as a gift. And to feel not first that what the first thing that needs to happen here is I need to be the source, I need to be the giver, but I received such a gift in that moment genuinely that for us then being with is now the first and primary work. And then being with can get you to doing with. And so we've still continued to wean ourselves off of all the doing. And I think the place-based ministry has been really helpful language that you all have brought to Alton, have brought to me, and to what we're doing to sort of name the value of just be with people and see what happens. Receive people as a gift. Receive hospitality from someone that you didn't think had anything to offer, but begin by recognizing the goodness of God that's still in that person, in their life, that kind of thing. So for us then, that being with, that mutuality that's hard to program, but then you get a feeling for it. You know, it's, that becomes a gift that when we do like these overnight warming locations, which are essentially cold weather shelters for people who have not enough or no shelter at all on the coldest nights of the year, like that experience could be very sanitized and very impersonal and very much like any other service project that I've ever led. right? But with Alton Mission and what we learned, kind of staying at the center of it, now that experience of just getting through the night together can have a bit of being with culture, can have some mutuality that then allows people to be healed. And I think we've seen as many volunteers be healed by that as we've seen unhoused people experiencing material poverty healed by it.
You know, I thank you for sharing that story, and thank you for sharing that part of this is just the will to be without any other pretense, right? I find that it's really challenging for churches just to be present. You know, if it's like, if we don't have something to do, if we don't have something to give, we almost don't know how to relate. And so it's just challenging to sit there. That being said, I know that a lot of churches are trying to be a good neighbor, and they're working towards it. Obviously, we've got it in our, you know, the greatest commandment is to and to go love our neighbor and to love our neighbor as ourselves. But what kind of advice would you give to churches that are trying to be more place-based and trying to be more conscientious of their neighbor?
Get David Park and the Lupton Center to train you. Get a City Shapers cohort in your city.
Say it again, people in the back.
Yeah.
Talk about it over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, for you.
No, but that's real. That's real. I mean, find people who can teach you how to do it, who can correct, who can practice, who can encourage. Find other people who are doing it in other places so you don't feel like you're crazy, so that right when you're like, nothing's happening, let me just pull the ripcord and escape again. No, I do think it is actually important. And I believe, very much in you guys and the work that you do. So that's sort of being humorous, but
not real.
For real. People should get some training connection.
It takes intentionality. It's one thing to sit around a table in a meeting or wherever and want to do it. It just doesn't happen. I mean, you really have to be intentional, which means you have to flip the script, change your schedule, move monies around differently, everything. You have to think differently about so many things in order to be available and to be intentional to walk in neighborhoods, to meet with people consistently, to show up over and over and over again. And it's a long road, but it's worth it. But it does. It takes intentionality, and it totally has to change the way we, as Peter says, the way we've been taught and trained so often.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the great commandment at the end of Matthew's gospel, go into all the world, right? And so we just keep going. And a lot of times what happens is, and especially in the context of material poverty, you know, I'm going to go somewhere and then I'm going to retreat back home, or I'm going to go somewhere and I'm going to stick with somebody. But as soon as my help isn't helpful and I'm no longer living a story where I get to be, you know, a great Christian hero of all time, and then it's kind of like, well, this isn't really the story I signed up for. So I'm going to just keep on going. And, you know, you have to read and remember earlier in Matthew, as well as the missionary instructions in Luke, you know, when Jesus says, go to this place. And then when you find a person of peace, then stay with them.
Right.
Don't bounce from house to house. So it's go and then stay. That's the exact same thing that the Spirit said to Philip. Go up and stay near that chariot. And so the going is important, but without the staying and the sticking with the people that you've been called to, it never happens. So a lot of times I think what happens is we go and we find hospitality from someone in our neighborhood, someone in the place that we've been called to, and then we look around to trade up. You know, someone has a little more influence. Someone has, let's be honest, somebody has a little more money and a little nicer house and a little more comfortable friends. And maybe they've got a cabin that they would let a pastor use. So, you know what I mean? And so you just start to, you look around and think, how can I trade up out of this initial person of peace who has provided me with some kind of gift, right? And this is the first. So Jesus says, stick with it. Don't jump from house to house. Stay with the person of peace. And so I mean, it might be as simple as that. Finding the person of peace, I think, is different. Like what Dave said, you know, you've got all of your life already programmed out, because that's what we do. Right. I drive the same route pretty much to and from work, or to and from school, or to and from, you know, the house or activities or whatever. I spend my money in pretty much the same way. I watch the same things. I talk to the same people. So to find some kind of experience, like, I think Mike Frost calls it this coracle. And so he talks about, you know, the coracle is you jump in this little round boat with the Celtics and you know, push off, and then wherever it lands, then step out and just in faith, receive that as this is where God wants me to be. This is where. And so in some sense, like you've got to find a way to insert a little bit of, if not randomness, then at least, serendipity. Like the serendipity, the mystery, the playfulness,
the Holy Spirit,
or the Holy Spirit. Sure. Yeah. Just trying to find some of those ways to get to an unexpected place with some unexpected people, and then just stick there and learn what you can learn, receive what there is to be received, and just before you say anything, just figure out what the Spirit is already at work there doing.
What a great combination. Dave saying intentionality, and then you saying, don't be so intentional that it's airtight. This is a really piece of advice. Can I ask you, you guys have known each other for 13 years, and I don't know how long you've been in your respective ministries, but at what—
I thought you were going to say, I don't know how much longer you want to know each other.
That's where I thought he was going.
No, but you guys are about to expire. What year did you feel like, or maybe there's a year where you said like year four is very different from year five, and I don't know if we'll ever go back, or maybe it's year seven. I mean, there's different sort of timelines to this, but just out of your experience, how long when you were sticking with it and you went and you stayed, how long before you're like, and I don't need to go anymore. Like, this is where I'm meant to be. Do you have that sort of timeline? Just because I think people really struggle with the longevity and the long walk of discipleship.
Yeah, I still don't feel that yet. no, I'm joking. I think for me,
I wasn't joking. I thought I was about to be real.
I'll feel it. I will be real. 2017 was the year for me. I think racial reconciliation did a lot of work that year in response, and really brought us together. Around some of the things in our country going on at that time, some of the political culture. I think that for me started it. And I think to build on that 2019, I think when we started doing the work to care for our unhoused friends, to just walk alongside, provide a place to get our friends out of the cold on nights just to keep them alive, really started to cement for me, I think, man, this is a long game. Changing structures and systems and just knowing people and being in relationships and not leaving when it gets hard, all of those things, for me, probably 17, really start to see some fruit of our labor.
I mean, I think that for me, like I'm a restless person. And so like, I think I need to be able to distinguish between discernment and calling and just my own restlessness. And I haven't always done a great job, with that, but then also not to just say, oh, my restlessness, can still be a gift. It just needs to be used and harnessed in a certain way. But, I think, thinking sacramentally, so the two of the sacraments that most Christian traditions can agree on are communion or the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper, because we can't agree on what to call it. So I'll try to hit all the names so we don't leave anybody out. But I think everybody calls baptism. So I think maybe we're safe there with just, so you've got communion and you've got baptism. And I think for me, I recognize that if I'm honest, in terms of grace and transformation, I very much prefer baptism, which is like we did an action one time. It was a before and after, and everything was changed, and you don't need to keep doing it because you did it. And I would love for that to be true, but baptism isn't actually the center. Like, it's incredibly important, but it's not at the center of Christian community. You know, it is the burial with Christ and rising. So there's that connection, but communion is not just a connection to Christ, but this is the body and the blood, you know, and there's like and with communion, you do it over and over and over and over. You never get to a place where you don't need to take communion again. And the one predominant requirement for taking communion is just that you are hungry and recognize a need for the meal. And so for me, I just think I would prefer to go and to have a transition, to have a project, to have a whatever, and it works and stuff is great. And now there's a clear before and after, but the reality is, and we do communion every week because of this. The reality is I'm invited to come and start again. And especially for us, like we were kind of in that mode. We're just starting over a new idea as a church plan. Okay, start over again because that didn't work. Start over again. Are we just done? I think what I didn't realize at the time but value now is that in all of that starting again, starting again, starting again, I think that God was training us to be much more faithful friends for people caught in material poverty, because starting over is such a part of their daily and weekly existence that if I can't find grace in starting again today, start over, start over, start over. If I don't see myself as not stuck there, but there's grace in the starting over every single time I reach out for something of substance from God, then yeah, I mean, I can end up getting frustrated. I can end up. So I just, all the different things that we've done, I think it's just kind of like I've been able to see enough times there was no one thing that we did, and then everything was just different and lasting change after that. But kind of what Dave was saying, well, there was this little thing that we did, and then that led us to this little thing that maybe was a little bit more significant, and then we tried this and it didn't work out, but that opened up these relationships. So we're just at a place now where just maintaining the momentum from each of those start again, start again, start again, has been really gracious and really valuable, if that makes sense.
It does to me. But I've gotten a chance to get to know you guys a little more. So hopefully people will listen to this multiple times, but it's a real joy. Thank you so much. I'm always humbled by hearing your stories, and just seeing you guys interact and working with you guys in Alton has made me really just appreciate your faithfulness and your genuine love for people, your neighborhoods, and the gospel. I think it's really beautiful.
Well, I was hoping we were going to hear more about your church. Have you talked about your church on the podcast here?
I haven't, but you know.
So how would you, can you pick at least one of the questions you asked us and answer it?
Well, I'm in a different context, but I feel like we're on a similar journey. I think this has been sort of our sort of point of empathy, is that we're wrestling with churches that are not sort of fitting that, hey, let's go, you know, Six Flags Over Jesus type experience, which is my church is in a diverse area, but we're trying to do something new and conversational and take the stage away. But we also practice communion every Sunday. We also have really sobered up around the, not around the performance side, but really trying to be real about what it is we're actually trying to do in gathering. And so, I mean, I resonate with a lot of what you guys are saying, but especially the hard part, the small parts. Like I wanted to be extraordinary in ministry, and I've sometimes found myself grieving that I'm very ordinary and that what we've done is really small and it feels insignificant. Mm-hmm. But like you said, that there's these moments and there are these people that are extremely significant, whether, you know, it's a 15-year-old boy or a 70-year-old refugee or whatever the case, you start to realize, like, I saw Christ today, and I didn't see him coming at all. Like, but I'm pretty sure I saw him. And those glimpses, which, you know, they don't happen every Sunday, but man, when they happen, you're like, I'm so glad I got here to see it. And we got to break bread, or, you know, we laughed over something really small, but it's those things that are really hard to, like you said, they're almost impossible to program. You know, I didn't get trained in it at seminary, and regardless of the fact that I can translate 1 Samuel 13 in Hebrew.
Can you really?
I did for an assignment, but.
Pull that thing back out. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what your church was waiting for. send it to me. Send it to me. Maybe I'll do it.
Yeah.
No, what you said does make me think, because in your question earlier, what's the gift that you give to your neighborhood? And I think that what I hear is there are a lot of people who would say a different world is possible. But in all these little fleeting and fragile ways, there are these communities that are just remaining faithful to the place and the person of Christ in that place. We're saying a different world is not just possible, but it's present.
Right.
And it's not taken over like the Roman Empire or other empires that may be at hand. But it is this gentle, there's something, it's like fragile, and yet there's something stronger than anything else. More like you sense kind of a power that you get to lay hold of for a second. So,
yeah. And I've heard it feels like, you know, when some people play golf, I don't really play golf, but they say like there's this one swing where everything just, it hits right. They hit the golf ball just right on the club. Their swing was perfect and it sings. And I kind of feel like there's moments like that for me, like in doing this kind of church work in a community for a neighborhood, where it's like, there's these moments where it sings off the tee. And I can't wait. I mean, that's what drives a lot of men back to the golf course to try to find that moment again. I feel like that's what it's like for me.
That's beautiful. Well, thanks for letting me take control for a second. I was like, come on, you got like so much to add to this. I know we've had conversations, and I just,
late into the late night, right? I mean, it's,
oh yeah,
we've had lots of good conversations, but I genuinely couldn't think of anybody better to ask about church and neighborhood. I wanted to start off with you guys because I knew I have a lot of respect for you guys.
Yeah.
So this makes me very happy.
Thanks, mutual, David. Thank you.
Yeah.
One of the best ways that we can offer to see what it looks like to partner well with the neighborhood is for you to come here for a visit. We love hosting guests in historic South Atlanta. In the spring and the fall, we host a 2-day immersive event called Open House. So please come, meet our team, see the work, walk our neighborhood. To register for this, go to fcsministries.org/openhouse. Place Matters is produced by Focused Community Strategies, whose mission it is to partner with under-resourced neighborhoods to provide innovative and holistic development that produces flourishing communities and God's shalom. Place Matters is hosted by FCS's training and consulting team. If you'd like to inquire about our training and consulting services, please reach out to us via our website or find us on LinkedIn and social media. This information can be found in the show notes. If you'd like to watch these episodes, the video can be found on our YouTube channel. And if you like these episodes, please share them on social media. Your support means a lot to us. The show was edited by Tim Rhodes with music by Eric North. Special thanks to David Park, Becca Klein, and Rose Silva at FCS for their work in organizing and recording these sessions. We would like to say thanks to our partner, Lilly Endowment, Inc., whose Thriving Congregations grant has made this podcast possible.